Well, good morning, everyone. It's what a joy to be back this morning to our guests. We welcome you to the Southeast Church of Christ. We thank you for being here with us this morning to worship our God together. If you have any cell phones, we're going to ask everyone who has any cell phones, any tablets, if you can please silence the volume, if you can turn them off, as we want to give our God our very best on this first day of the week, which we know is when we as saints get together worship him in spirit and in truth. For the past 2 days, now today the third day, we've been having our annual gospel meeting, and this year's theme has been titled, Have You Considered My Servant Job? As we've done every year this morning in our Bible class, we will continue this theme. Brother Ronnie Sherfus comes to us from the Bryan College Station Church of Christ, where he's one of the instructors at the Texas School of Preaching. Our brother has been preaching around from 99, 98, if I'm not mistaken, and he's a graduate from the Memphis School of Preaching. He is accompanied by his beautiful wife, Athena, and his three lovely daughters, Izzy, Kaylee, and Athena. Our brother will be teaching us this morning the lesson, He Knows the Way I Take, Job's Trust in God. So as we've said before, this is part of the gospel meeting, but this is a Bible class. So if you have any questions or if you have want to know more, feel free to raise your hand, and I know that our brother would be more than ready and willing to take these and try to answer them with scripture in hand. So again, without taking much time, Brother Ronnie teaches the word.
Do I need this up here on this podium?
That's right.
Okay. Good morning. It's good to see everyone here this morning. I would ask if you would to open your Bibles to the book of Job chapter 23. That's where we're going to begin, Job chapter 23. And as I have given consideration of this particular lesson, really all of these lessons over the course of this series of gospel meetings, I've taught the book of Job for a number of years, at first at Southwest. I'm also be teaching this book at the Texas School of Preaching. And for the most part, that's what I've done as far as this book, is teach it in a class format. And so this hour, that's how we're going to approach this particular lesson, would be in a class format. And so if someone has a comment, wants to make a comment, have a question, suggestion, and certainly just throw up your hand, call out my name, say, hey, Ronnie, I want to ask a question. Hey, Ronnie, I want to make a point. That's fine. And we'll go about this particular study this way. The ultimate purpose is to demonstrate that there are some things that Job knew and there are some things that Job did not know. And I want to point out, first of all, there were some things that Job knew about God. Then there obviously were some things that Job knew about himself, and in particular with regards to his suffering, some of the charges that were being made against him. And then I want us to highlight some things that Job did not know, and then make a point with regards to Job's faithfulness and his trust. Let's just leave it at that, and then we'll move forward. Let's look at Job chapter 23. And let's just start at verse 3. Now let's start at verse 1, and let's bring ourselves up to verse 10, because that's really the thrust of what we're going to consider. Then Job answered and said, even to this day is my complaint bitter. Understand this, Job's complaint here, he is complaining, really you could almost say he's venting. Anyone ever come home from a rough day at work, your wife is there just as innocent as the day is long, hasn't said or done anything out of the way to you? Or you come home after a rough day at work, your husband's there, hasn't done anything to you, but in frustration you say something, just venting, and your wife look at you like, why are you going to talk to me like that? And he said, listen, I apologize. I'm just venting. I've had a rough day. Imagine if you've lost everything that you had, including your children. You've been struck with an illness that is devastating your body and you don't know why. You suppose that you might complain in the bitterness of your soul, might you from time to time vent? Okay, this is what we see throughout the text, is Job complaining. And his friends will jump all over him, but then Job will say, you know, understand, I'm just trying to vent. These are words from a man that are as wind. So just let me vent, is what he's trying to say. And we'll see that on occasion here. And so, in the bitter, my complaint, even today is my complaint bitter. My stroke, that is, his suffering, is heavier than my groaning. I'm not even complaining as much as I have the right to. In other words, oh, that I knew where I might find him, talking about Jehovah God. That I might come even to his seat. If I could just go to the throne room of God and have a conversation. That's really what Job wanted. I want to sit down and have a conversation with Jehovah God and say, please explain to me why you are doing this to me. Now, we know when we take time and read through the book, God was not doing this to Job. God was allowing this to happen to Job. Now, Job chapter 2, verse 3, God says, thou bringest me to destroy him without cause. Who has all power? Jehovah God does. Could God have stopped Job's suffering? Yes. So in that sense, by allowing it, God says, I'm the one doing this. But we understand it was the adversary. But Job says, I would come to his seat, and Job wants to demand an answer. Now, that's where Job was wrong, because Job does not have a right to demand anything of God, and Jehovah God will address that in chapter 40. He said, I would order my cause before him. I would fill my mouth with arguments. So it's as if I'm coming before into a courtroom, and I would have my arguments, and I would say, this is the man that I am, and this is the man, this is my character, this is my integrity, this is my life. Please tell me why this is happening. I would know the words which he would answer me and understand what he would say unto me. Will he plead against me with his great power? If I come before Jehovah God's throne, would he plead against me? No, he wouldn't plead. But he would put strength in me because he would give me an explanation. He would answer my words. There, before the throne of God, the righteous might dispute with him, converse with him. Job is here saying, I'm a righteous man. I'm not an ungodly man, as his friends were claiming. So should I be delivered forever from my judge. That is, I would be declared innocent of all charges that's being made against me. Behold, I go forward, but he is... So, remember, verse 3, oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come even to his seat. Now, verse 8, behold, I go forward, but he's not there, and backward, but I cannot perceive him. On the left hand, where he doth work, but I cannot behold him. He hideth himself on the right hand that I cannot see. I would love to go before the throne of God and speak to him. I know that I would be justified, but I cannot find him. Verse 10. But God, here's Job's trust, but he knoweth the way that I take. When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. And so Job says, I don't really understand this. I don't know why this is taking place. I don't know why there are all of these witnesses against me. That is, all of his suffering, his friends, suppose, were witnesses against Job that he was a great wicked sinner. I don't understand this, but I know ultimately when God tries me, then I'll be justified before God. So there were some things Job didn't know, but there were some things that Job did know. Now let's notice some things that Job knew about God. Now I've got some chicken scratching up here on this board. I don't know if you can, you may not even be able to see it depending on how far back you are. And you may be up close enough and still can't read it because, you know, I don't have the best writing in the world. But I want to start out by noting some things that Job knew about God. Some things that Job knew about God. Number one, Job knew the worthiness and the holiness of God. Job knew the worthiness and the holiness of God. Let's look at Job chapter 40. And we're going to look at verses 1 through 5. Now, Job chapter 1, verse 5, we see that Job is offering sacrifices to God. He knows the holiness of God, the worthiness of God. He offers sacrifices to Jehovah God. But I want you to notice the words here in Job chapter 40. Now, let me set the background for you. All through the book, Job is talking with his friends, and there's this discussion going on. Starting at chapter 32 through 37, there's a man who's there we don't know anything about, Elihu, and he begins to speak. And then at chapter 38, God steps forward, and he begins to speak and rebukes Job. And Job had earlier said, if I could speak, he can go first and then I'll answer, or I let me go first and then you answer me. Well, if you're standing before God, who's going to speak first? Jehovah God will. So chapter 38, Jehovah God begins to speak, and for two chapters, demonstrating from the creation, first the creation itself and then the creatures in the creation, Jehovah God demonstrates his wisdom, knowledge, understanding, and great power. And then he stops in chapter 40 and says, okay, Job, it's your turn. I want you to answer. What's Job? Job chapter 40, verses 1 through 5. Moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, shall he that contendeth with the Almighty instruct him? Will he, that's you, Job, who is contending with me, are you going to teach me something, Job? He that reproveth God, let him answer it. Job chapter 13, verses 20 through 22. Job said, he can go first or I'll go first. Okay, Job, you wanted to speak. I went first. Now it's your turn. What's Job? Then Job answered the Lord and said, behold, I am vile. Job is not here acknowledging great wickedness. Yes, my friends are right. I'm a vile person. I'm a person of great wickedness. Job is simply acknowledging, in comparison to God, he is nothing. Now, let's demonstrate this. Go to Luke chapter 5. And we see similar language with Peter with regards to Jesus Christ. Luke chapter 5. And this is the record. It's from verse 1 through 11. We're not going to read all of that. But this is the record of the great catch where Peter, James, John, Andrew had been fishing all night, didn't catch anything. They're cleaning the nets. Jesus tells them to cast your nets here. And so in Luke chapter 5, verse 5, and Simon answering said unto him, Master, the one who has authority to command, Master, we've toiled all night and have taken nothing. Nevertheless, at thy word, I will let down at thy net. I have faith in your word. And he does so, and there are so many fish that are taken. When they bring the net onto the ship, the ship, and those ships would be a size to have to hold about 10 to 12 men. They didn't have necessarily 10 to 12 men on there because of the gear, but it would hold that many men. It began to lower the boat because of the weight that it would begin to take on water, that they had to call their partners, James and John, for help. All right, now notice verse 8. When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees saying, depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. So he goes from acknowledging Jesus as master, one who has the power and authority to command, to Lord, he who is over. And notice, I'm a sinful man. Peter is not here confessing great sin. Peter is saying, in comparison to you, I am here. That's what Job is doing in Job chapter 40. Now let's go back there. Job chapter 40, verse 4. Behold, I'm vile. What shall I answer thee? Job said, here's what I'll do. I'm not going to speak anymore. I spoke and I spoke out. Have you ever said something and as soon as the words came out of your mouth, you thought, I wish I hadn't said that? Have you ever said something and then after you were rebuked by somebody, I apologize. I was out of line. I shouldn't have said that. Look at close of verse 4. I will lay my hand upon my mouth. Once have I spoken, but I will not answer. Yea, twice, but I will proceed no further. I am a vile man. In comparison to you, Jehovah God, you who are worthy, you who are above man, I'm way down here. I'm nothing. Job, this is what Job knew about God, of his worthiness. Another thing that Job knew about God I have up here is that man's blessings come from God. Now that's demonstrated again in chapter 1, verse 5, offering sacrifices, giving honor and glory and praise to Jehovah God. Not to an idol, not to himself. But not all men have such knowledge. Let's look at Job chapter... Well, let's look at chapter 2. Let's just notice a few passages here. Job chapter 2, verse 9. And notice Job's reply to his wife. Job chapter 2, verse 9. Then said his wife unto him... Have you ever wondered why Job's children were taken, but Job's wife was left? She also was in the hands of Satan. All that he has is in thy hand. Why did she leave? Why did Satan leave his wife? He had to have somebody to deliver his messages. You know, I have great sympathy for Mrs. Job. Often, someone will say, wow. Well, Job refers to her, he doesn't refer to her as, but he refers to her speaking as one of the foolish women. And people say, well, she didn't have the faith that Job had. Let me tell you something. That woman lost everything Job lost and more. Because you know what she had to do? She's had to see her best friend suffer. Now, which would you rather do, ladies? Endure physical suffering yourself? Or watch your best friend suffer? Well, dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. Curse God. The word curse, that's the Hebrew term, is often translated bless, and it's the sense of a greeting or a dismissal. And that's in essence what she was saying. Dismiss God from your life. And then just die. Either just give up and die, or just go ahead and kill yourself. This is her mindset. But he said unto her, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. He does not call her a foolish woman, but says her words are as such. And then notice this, what? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? Evil being calamity, difficulties. There is an emphasis here. All we have is of God. There's also an emphasis of God's sovereignty. You know, there's some things that Job simply did not know and did not understand, but here's something that Job knew about God. He knew that Jehovah God had all sovereignty over his creation, and God could do whatever he desired to do. Job said, I don't understand why you're doing this. Job said, why are you doing this? Job said, I'm not worthy of this, but Job never said, you don't have the right to do this. He never questioned God's sovereignty. In fact, let's notice that. Let's jump down from majesty and might, and let's just look at the sovereignty of God here in the eyes of Job. Let's go to chapter 12. Job chapter 12, verses 7 through 16. Job chapter 12, verses 7 through 16. Now, we see it in verse 1, Job is the one speaking. And he's speaking to his friends. Look at... You know, Job can be funny sometimes. He's a very sarcastic man. Look at verse 2. No doubt, but ye are the people. Now I'm going to show my age a little bit, and I look around and I see that there are some that are the same age as I am. And you know, words and phrases kind of come and go as far as in style and how they're used. How many ever remember the phrase, you're the man? Or I'm the man. You ever use that phrase? You're the man. That's what Job is saying. No doubt, but you're the man. Talking to Eliphaz, building. Oh, you are the people. And what's this? And wisdom shall die with you. When you three boys are dead, there won't be any wisdom left in this world. Being very sarcastic. But I have understanding as well as you do. And they had spoken to try to demonstrate to Job the great wisdom and power of God. Well, Job now speaks, and let's go back down here to verse 7. And look as he speaks with regards to God's sovereignty. But ask now the beast, and they shall teach thee, and the fowls of the air, and they shall tell thee. Look at God's creation and learn something. Or speak to the earth, and it shall teach thee, and the fishes of the sea shall declare unto thee. Who knoweth not in all these that the hand of the Lord hath wrought this? God has created certainly all things, and because he's the creator of all things, he has sovereign rule over all things. Who knoweth not in all these the Lord hath wrought this? In whose hand is the soul of every living thing and breath of all mankind? Doth not the ear try words and the mouth taste meat? I can hear something and I can determine if it's true. I can taste something and I know if it's good or if it's not good. With the ancient is wisdom and length of days understanding. Here had been the source of the friends' knowledge and understanding. Job looked to the ancients. They lived for many, many years. We go to Genesis chapter 5 and see Methuselah lived 969 years of age. Adam lived some 900 plus years. The ancients lived. Let me tell you something. You talk to a man who's in his 90s and just sit and listen and be amazed. Imagine talking to someone who lived for 900 years. I wonder what they would learn over that period of time. And Job says, absolutely, with the ancients is great wisdom and understanding because they've been around so long. Have they been around as long as God? Verse 14, behold, rather 13, with him is wisdom and strength. He hath counsel and understanding. Behold, he breaketh down and it cannot be built again. God's sovereignty. He shutteth up a man and there can be no opening. God's sovereignty. Behold, he withholdeth the waters and they dry up. Also, he sendeth them out and they overturn the earth. There's the first reference to the global flood of Noah. With him is strength and wisdom. The deceived and the deceiver are his. All are accountable to God. Those who deceive man and those who are deceived by man. All are accountable to God. Why? Because of his sovereignty. Job, there were some things that Job didn't know, but he knew of God's worthiness. He knew that blessings come from God. Job knew of God's sovereignty. Job also knew of God's majesty and of God's might. Let's look at chapter 9. Well, how much time have I got here anyways? Is somebody keeping time? But I don't have my watch. How much time? I'll have 5 minutes after a bell? Okay. Okay. Let's notice here the majesty and might. Job chapter 9. I've got noted here to read verses 1 through 12. Let's see if we get that far. The emphasis on the majesty and might of God. Then Job answered and said, I know it is so of a truth, but how should a man be just with God? And so Job is acknowledging that what Bildad had just said in chapter 8, I agree with what you've said, Bildad. Now, Bildad is making a terrible application of the truths he is speaking because he's making an application to Job, though he was innocent of the charges the friends were making. But he said, but in principle, I know what you're saying is true. And how can a man who is here be just with Jehovah God, who is here? If he, man, will contend with him, God, he cannot answer him one of a thousand. Notice the wording. Doesn't say he couldn't answer him one in a thousand. Maybe I could answer God one in a thousand. No. Job says, if there were a thousand times God challenged man, it wouldn't be even one time he could answer. It'd be zero times he could answer because God's wisdom is so high. He is wise in heart and mighty in strength. Who hath hardened himself against him and hath... Who has ever hardened themselves against God? Who has stiffened their neck against God? Who has been in opposition to God and came out on the best side of it? Well, let's talk to Pharaoh. In the book of Exodus, whenever Moses approaches and Aaron approaches Pharaoh, Jehovah says, let my people go out into the wilderness to offer a sacrifice. Does anyone recall what Pharaoh's response was? Who is Jehovah? And so Jehovah says, Pharaoh, allow me to introduce myself to you. And what was the end of that? Pharaoh didn't come out on the good side of it. No one has ever hardened themselves against God and prospered because of his majesty, because of his might and power. Verse 5, which reproveth the mountains and they know not, which overturneth them in his anger. We see God overturning the earth, which shaketh the earth out of her place. The pillars thereof tremble. Pillars of the earth, that being, again, the mountains here in poetic language. Which commandeth the sun and it riseth not and sealeth up the stars. Who commands the day? We have occasion in the book of Joshua where God commanded the sun to stand still. We have an account in Isaiah about chapter 38 or 39 when God said, I'll cause the sun to go backwards in time. Job was aware of God's majesty and aware of God's might. Let's move forward and let's notice the superiority of God. Go to chapter 9. Job chapter 9. Is that where we are? Let's drop down to verse 32. And this is one of the great verses in the book. Job says, for he is not a man as I am, that I should answer him, and we should come together in judgment. I can't look God eye to eye and speak to him as an equal, because he is far superior to me. Now we have to notice the next verse because we're here. Neither is there, and I'm reading from the old King James, neither is there any daysman. The American Standard says umpire. The New King James says mediator. What if we had no mediator? Who would reason with God on our behalf? See, Job was on the other side of the cross, unaware that a mediator was coming. And Job said, in this condition, because he's God and I'm man, there is not one. Look at it. Neither is there a mediator betwixt us that might lay his hand upon us both, that has walked in the shoes of man and walked in the shoes of God, that can put his hands on the shoulder of God and the hands on the shoulder of man and bring them together and make peace. See, Job knew the superiority of God. Now, there's some things that Job knew about God. He knew that God was worthy of man's love and devotion. He knew that all blessings come from God. He knew of God's majesty and might, his sovereignty, and his superiority. Let me tell you something else that Job knew. Job knew that he was suffering greatly. Look at chapter 6. Job knew that he was suffering greatly. How much time have I got, Brother Obed? Got about 45 minutes left? 30 minutes left? All right, let me take a breath and slow down a little bit. Job knew that he was suffering greatly. Obviously, Job knew that he was suffering because he was experiencing the suffering. And we will have occasion this evening to consider the suffering of Job, because we read in chapter 2 that he was struck with boils from head to toe. And if we stop there, we assume that's all there was, but there was so much more. But Job provides for us in poetic language an explanation of his suffering. Look at Job chapter 6. Let's look at verses 1 through 3. But Job answered and said, oh, that my grief were thoroughly weighed and my calamity laid in the balances. Now, if we had time, we would look at chapters 4 and 5, and we would see the first friend, and the friends came for a good purpose, chapter 2. They came, they made an appointment to come together to comfort Job. But when they arrived, they went from comforters to accusers. Job will call them miserable comforters, are ye all. But Eliphaz, in chapters 4 and 5, just lowers the boom on Job. And in chapter 4, verse 7, and we noticed this yesterday, but look at it again. Job 4, 7, remember, I pray thee, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the righteous cut off? And then as we go further in chapter 4, Eliphaz said, well, I had a vision, and in my vision I saw you as a wicked man. That's what he's saying, in essence, not verbatim, not in those words, but in so many words, that's what he's saying. So now Job is going to try to defend himself here in chapter 6. And so, Job says, oh, that my grief were thoroughly weighed and my calamity laid in the balances. Eliphaz, if you just showed up. You know, we read from page to page when we read the scriptures, and it's as if this happened, and then this happened, and this happened, just like that. But listen, Job, when the first attack, he loses all that he has, his flocks and herds, all of his servants and his children. Satan returning and striking Job physically didn't happen the next day. We need to understand there would have been weeks, perhaps months, that would take place. Because all of these servants, his children, There would be funerals, there would be burials, there would be time of grief. And then he returns again. And then there is going to be enough time with regards to the physical suffering that we see in chapter 2 when the friends arrive, they can't even recognize the man. And they show up and immediately begin to condemn him, having no knowledge of any wrong he's done and no knowledge of how great his suffering has been. And Job says, if you could just, Eliphaz, take my grief and my sorrow and my suffering and put it in a balance, it would be so heavy. I don't know what on earth would even bring up the scale to make the balance equal. And then in verse 3, Job considers the heaviest thing that he can imagine. Notice what he says. For now it would be heavier than the sand of the sea. Therefore my words are swallowed up. Your translation may say, therefore my words are hard to swallow. Therefore what I'm saying is difficult for you to hear. I'm venting, Eliphaz. You're my friend. Encourage me. But notice what Job puts on the balance, on the scale. My grief and my sorrow would be heavier than the sand of the sea. Well, you think about how heavy sand is. What's heavier than dry sand? Wet sand. So you have sand. You have wet sand. But what's going to be a part of sand from the sea? What type of water is seawater? It's salty, wet sand. Job said, even then you would not fully understand my suffering and my grief. Job knew he had been suffering. And not only this, but Job knew that he was not guilty of great wickedness. Now if you're taking some notes, I'm going to give you some passages of Scripture to write down. We're going to notice some of them, but just so you would have some to look at a later time to consider. We notice this one in Job 22, 5 through 10, where Eliphaz says, your iniquities are infinite. Job, we could not even list everything. And then he begins to acknowledge or begins to list some of the specific sins that he accuses Job of. Then Bildad speaks in Job chapter 8, verses 8 through 20. And he notes in poetic language, he uses marshy plants, he uses a spider web, he uses this a vine, as it were, growing around rocks. And he uses those figures to try to instruct Job. Job, you're not depending on God, and not depending on God, you have perished. The wicked may prosper, but it's only going to be temporary, and then they'll perish. And that's what you see there in those figures in Job chapter 8, verses 8 through 20. But I want us to look at Zophar. Job chapter 11. Open your Bibles to Job chapter 11. Of the men speaking, Zophar is going to speak the least. But in this particular instance, I want to read from verse 13 through 20. Now let's notice what he says. Job chapter 11, beginning with verse 13. And just notice the accusation here. For vain man would be wise. What did I say? 11? Let me back up. No, I said 13. Let me move to 13. Well, let me read 12, just because it's a fun verse. Okay? Forgive me, I'm having fun here. For vain man would be wise, though man be born like a wild ass's colt. Poetic language, what Zophar is telling Job. Job, the day you become a wise man will be the day that a donkey gives birth to a man. That's the day you'll have wisdom. We might say when pigs fly. He said when a donkey gives birth to a man. That's when you'll be a wise man. Then, if thou prepare thine heart and stretch out thine hands toward him, to stretch out the hands were to ask blessings of God. We read in the book of 1 Timothy, lifting up holy hands. The idea there is prayer, okay? Special requests. So that's what he says here. Job, if you would prepare your heart and stretch out your hands toward him, you can't do that now because your hands are full of iniquity. Look at 14. If iniquity be in thy hand, put it far from thee. Let not thy wickedness dwell in thy tabernacle. For then Then shalt thou lift up thy face without spot. Yea, thou shalt be steadfast and shalt not fear. Job had said that he was fearful. He was afraid. He was in terror of God. But Job, if you'd just cleanse your heart, you wouldn't be. Verse 16. Because thou shalt forget the misery and remember it as waters that pass away. Okay. Did you really just say that, Zophar? Job, I know you just buried 10 children. But if you'll just listen to me, you'll forget all about it. Verse 17. And thine age, your present day, and your future shall be clearer than the noonday. Joe, you said this is dark days for you. But imagine the sun at its highest peak. That's what your days would be like, Job, if you'll just get rid of all the iniquity in your hands. Well, we could read on, but you get the point. But Job declared that he was not guilty of such things. Now, let's go back to Job chapter 6. Because I want us to read together 25 through 29. How much time have I got, brother? Okay, good. Job 6, 25 through 29. How forcible are right words? How instructive? How effective are words that are right? But what doth your arguing reprove? If you speak good words, if you have substance to your arguments, you can have an impact and you can instruct. But your words, they're nothing. Do you imagine to reprove words and speeches of one? Do you imagine to prove, Job would say, my words and my speeches of one that is desperate, which are as wind? I am just trying to vent, and you're reproving me. Just listen and encourage me, please. Yea, ye overwhelm the fatherless, ye dig a pit for your friend. All right, the picture here is, we would have record, I believe it's in 2 Kings, maybe chapter 5 or 6, where there was a one who had lost her husband. They were in great debt, and those to whom they owed the debt came and took the children as payment. Job says, that's how you're treating me. Ye overwhelm the fatherless, ye dig a pit for your friend. Now therefore be content. Look upon me, for it is evident unto thee if I lie. You can look at me and know that I'm being honest and truthful. But look at verse 29. Return, I pray you, let it not be iniquity. Yea, return again, my righteousness is in it. Eliphaz, stop what you're saying. Back up and start again. You are destroying my integrity. You are destroying my righteous reputation. I'm innocent of all this. There were some things that Job knew. Job knew Jehovah God was worthy, gave all man blessings, was high above man, superior to man, his great majesty and might. He knew that God was superior and had all sovereignty. Job knew he had suffered greatly and his friends did not understand that. And Job knew that he was innocent of all the sin of which he had been accused. But there are also some things that Job did not know. Now let's consider these, some things that Job did not know. Look at chapter 3. Job did not know why he couldn't just die. You know, it's incredible to me and worthy of our consideration and understanding that in all this, Job never even considered taking his own life. But what do many do today? When they see themselves in a situation, you know, I'm going to die anyway. The doctor said I had 6 months. I'll just go ahead and take my life. Please don't do that, because your life is not yours to take. Job didn't try to take his life. He only wondered, why can't I just die? Now, let me make this point and then we'll read a few verses. Some people say, oh, you should never ask why. God said of Job, by inspiration, in all this, Job sinned not with his lips. But you know what Job did all through the book? He asked why. It's not a sin to ask why. Job was a man trying to figure out this life. What would be a sin is, in doubt, to turn from God. And Job never did that. He was just trying to seek some understanding. It gives me 5, correct? All right, chapter 3, let's look at 11 through 13 here. Chapter 3, 11 through 13. Why died I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? Oh, wow, wait a minute. Why died I not from, literally, in the womb? Wait a minute, Job. In order to die, you must first have what? In order to die, what must you first have? And Job said, why died I not from or in the womb? That means what was in the womb? Life. That tells me something about abortion. It's the wrongful taking of life. Why died I not from in the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? Why did the knees prevent me or receive me? That's not a picture of his mother giving birth. That's a picture of his father receiving him on his lap and raising him up. We see that in Genesis 48, 49, 50. Read those three chapters. You'll see that with Joseph bringing up his children, or Jacob bringing up his grandchildren. Why did the knees receive me, or why the breast that I should suck? For now should I have lain still and been quiet. I should have slept then had I been at rest. If I was just going to be born to endure all of this, why can I not die? Now, let's notice also here verses 20 through 22, and then we'll have to move on because time's fishing to get close. Verse 20, wherefore is light given to him that is in misery? He's talking about himself. And life unto the bitter of soul. Job was a bitter, he was experiencing bitterness. Why is life given to me? Who has the right to give and take life? Which long for death, but it cometh not, and dig for it more than hid treasures. To Job, death would have been the greatest treasure, which rejoice exceedingly and are glad when they can find the grave. Job said, why can't I just die? There were some things Job didn't know. I tell you something else Job didn't know. Job didn't know why the wicked prosper. Look at chapter 21. I've got, 3 minutes, we'll say? 2 minutes? We'll look at this, and then we'll make our point. Job chapter 21. And we're going to look at verses 7 through 16. Job 21, verse 7. Wherefore do the wicked live? You know, we sang the song last night, Farther Along We'll Know All About It. Farther along we'll understand why. Why are there some living that prosper living in wickedness year after year? I don't understand that, Job would say. Well, wherefore do the wicked live, become old, yea, are mighty in power? Their seed is established in their sight with them, and their offspring before their eyes. Where's my offspring, Job would say? They're gone, and I'm a righteous man. Why do the wicked get to enjoy their family? Their houses are safe from fear, neither is the rod of God upon them, as it is with me. Verse 10, their bull gendereth, they prosper. Their bull gendereth and faileth not. Their cow calveth and casteth not the calf. They send forth their little ones like a flock, and their children dance. Where are my flocks and herd? Where are my children and my grandchildren? They take a timbrel and harp and rejoice at the sound of the organ. They spend their days in wealth and in a moment go down to the grave. I wish I could just go down to the grave in a moment, but no, God has seen fit that I linger and linger and linger. Why do the wicked prosper even in death? Verse 14, therefore they say unto God, depart from us. I don't say that to God. My wife said, tell God to depart. That's what the wicked say. Therefore they say unto God, depart from us, for we desire not the knowledge of thy ways. What is the Almighty that we should serve him, and what profit should we have if we pray to him? What good? I've got everything I need. What good would it do to me to pray to Jehovah God and bow down to him? Verse 16, lo, their good is not in their hand. They're not self-made men. Everything they have was given to them by God. Now look at this. The counsel of the wicked is far from me. I can't wrap my mind around the way people think. Now let's go to Job 23 where we started. And we'll bring our lesson to a close. I've got time. All right, 10 through 12. But he knoweth the way that I take. When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. My foot hath held his steps. His way have I kept and not declined. Neither have I gone back from the commandment of his lips. I have esteemed the words of his mouth more than my necessary food. Job says, there are some things that I know about God. There are certainly things I know about myself. There are some things in this world I don't know. But I know God. And for me, that is enough.